So hi, everybody. It is June 27th, 2019, and this is our fourth call in the Loving Kindness series, and we are beginning, as always, in Shavasana. So find yourself a comfortable place to lie down. If you're driving, please pull over. And if you are not able to lie down, then you can substitute a seated meditation as we go through this practice. Last week, you actually did the Loving Kindness or the Shavasana practice on your own. So today, let me guide you through it. And what I want you to notice is what's new today. Every day the practice is the same. And every day it's also different. We never step into the same river twice. What are you noticing today? What's alive in you now? How attentive are you to this moment of this breath? How much of you is present here? So align your body so that you're comfortable, support the head and neck, and let the legs and arms be relaxed, low back relaxed. If you have any tightness in the low back, be sure to lift the legs. You can place the calves on a chair, for instance, or place a bolster or rolled blanket beneath the thighs. So notice whether you're comfortable or not. This part of the practice is huge in creating our businesses, because often we don't notice until there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. Here, day by day, we learn to be attentive. Does this feel right? Does this feel good? And what adjustments are needed to make this the best it can be today? And then having a mind that lets go, that says, all right, now this is good enough. Let me be still. Close my eyes and rest. So just let the whole body release to the earth, letting go of everything but this moment, even letting go of anything needed in this moment. This is not about doing, it's about being. Take this time for yourself. Let this time be an oasis for you in the midst of the fullness of life. Take time. Let the eyes sink back toward the back brain. Relax all the tiny muscles of the face. Let the skin of the scalp soften. Soften at the back of the neck and the throat. Swallow to let the throat soften further. Relax the tongue. The teeth be slightly parted. Jaw relaxed. As the eyes sink back toward the back brain and the ears recede back, so as though eyes and ears meet at a point of the back brain, as we withdraw the senses, the mind has the opportunity to become quiet. Let the mind quieten. Feel ease here. Ease of this moment. Ease of this breath, here and now. Nothing else needed, just the breath. How soon can you notice the mind's wandering? If you find your mind wandering, as mind will, can you notice it sooner, just a little sooner than before? Let the thought go. This is so unimportant, it doesn't merit your attention. Unimportant. Return to the breath. Watch the breath. Just notice what's in your heart right now. Is there any tension or fear or pushing away or worry? Just bundle all that up as not needed right now. Just put all those thoughts and feelings and imagine tying them up in a big net, put a bow on it. And send it off. Let it just travel away from you. Letting it go, dropping it away, and replacing that stuff with ease, well-being, connectedness. A heart filled with loving kindness cannot be filled with fear or hatred at the same time. Feeling the breath. Feeling the ease. Ease of this moment, ease of this breath. Ease of here now. And with each inhalation, let the heart center fill with loving kindness for self. For loved ones, for all beings everywhere. Letting go of this experience of Shavasana just as easily as you dropped into it. Not needing to be here any longer. Not anxious to be in the next moment either, out of Shavasana. Being in this in-between space of knowing soon you'll be coming out of Shavasana. Without the mind needing to race on to the next thing. Shavasana trains mindful attention and staying. Soon you will move, nothing happening yet. Then allow the breath to deepen. Let the body move in any way that feels good to you. Can you discern what feels good to you right now? Sometimes we've lost that through what others have told us. Do you need to want to stay quiet? Something stretching or wiggling or hands on the torso, or whatever it is for you, can you discern in this moment? What does the body want? But we'll keep the mind content. Santosha, contentment. And then bend the knees, give yourself a big hug. And just rock just barely from side to side, massaging the lower back, knees slightly to the left, slightly to the right, in your own rhythm. Gently, quietly. And then roll to the right side, support your head with your upper arm and wait. Be here. Softly open the eyes, let the gaze be just a few inches ahead of you on the floor. Keeping the gaze toward the floor, use your hands to press yourself up to sitting and return to our virtual circle, keeping the same quiet presence as you had in Shavasana, whatever quiet presence was gained, being content with that and bringing that here into our circle and into your day. And then camera on whenever you can. Training that practice of one-pointed attention. I was on a call with one of my teachers last week, and I noticed most people, almost everyone, had their camera off. I wanted to too. I kept my camera off for a while for no particular reason other than everyone else's was. And I just noticed, and I wanted to bring that to you, honestly, like with my ginger ale last week. And then when she encouraged people to turn on their camera if they could, I'm like, oh my. Right. So I did. I was one of the very few in the circle with my camera on. There wasn't any reason not to be seen. Other than I got onto that call at the last minute. We just found out at the very last minute it was happening. So I wasn't prepared. What was there to prepare for? Loving kindness to self, all as perfect as it is, being present. All right. So welcome. Great to see you all. I've been doing, as you know, and many of you have been there, lots of training that goes out to the world. And it feels really nice to be at home here with all of you. So nice. And so let's begin with Shavasana. A sentence or two. What did you love this time? Training that all year long so it becomes a practiced habit. Here's what I loved. Here's what served me. This is beautiful here. And then we look out in the world. It's like, oh, that's beautiful. Doesn't matter what's happening around us. And we see what's beautiful. And more of that comes to serve us in our lives. What was beautiful this time for you? Yep, Sherry.
I think what was, there were probably a couple of things. When you said, oh, if you feel tightness in your lower back, raise your legs or put something under it, it was, oh, okay. And the realization, that simple move felt so much better and made a big difference. And then the reminder that small changes can have a big impact.
We are learning so much as we do this very deceptively simple practice. I raise my legs, the pain stops, I feel comfortable, or the discomfort, I feel comfortable, it feels better. And our companies often, we might have 99 things in place. And it's like, why is it not working? And then let me investigate that disempowering question, right? Well, for that reason, that reason, that reason, that reason, and then try to move from there. Or, oh, I become aware sooner. Oh, it's just this little thing that needs a tweak. I tweak that thing and piece number 100 comes into place, or piece number 99, or piece number, you know, 8 out of 9, whatever it is. Often it's just this little tweak that's needed. And all of a sudden things start to move. And then it's one action, many results. And I'm working, you know, half as hard as everybody else and getting, you know, 10 times the results by placing support beneath my legs. Sherry, thank you for noticing. Love that. Yes. What else did you love here? Yeah, Grace.
Well, you were talking about what was about calming and focusing on the breath. I kept feeling this surge of energy and this need to do. I was like, but it's a very positive energy. So it's a surge of positive energy at the same time, calm and control.
Wow. This is great for all of us. And then for you, particularly Grace. That energy, and we've discussed this a couple of months ago, that came up for you about the need to do. And when often there are deep gifts in us, and the flip side of it, it's like the dark side that holds us back. Yvonne isn't on the call live here today. Hi, Yvonne. But I met with her a couple days ago, and we were laughing about her spreadsheet. Some of you know that, you know, one of Yvonne's gifts, and she says, but that's not actually really my gift. I'm really actually not that good at spreadsheets, Michelle. But she has a mind that can list and categorize and organize. And sometimes that in the past was to her detriment, because if you have to, then you're hanging on. But when you can release the having to and then utilize that gift, and Yvonne's on my mind here because, you know, when my man died, she was right there by my side. And if that skill of getting organized, we had to get to the bank because I had a stolen Visa card that week and I needed to replace my Visa card. We had to get to the AMA, the Alberta Motor Association, to buy both buy a vehicle and get insurance. I had to function for the 2 days after my man died, and her ability to organize like that so served. So letting go of the need to, then all of a sudden all this power is unleashed. And I don't know if that's how it's feeling to you, Grace, right now, but I am hearing that in you. Not that need, the driving need and have to act or else, but instead as one of your deep gifts. I'm really good at acting, but I'm still staying in Shavasana. I don't need to act right now. I'm in control and I can feel that urge because it's one of my gifts and here it is, but I'm just staying with the breath. Is that accurate of something of how it was feeling? That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. Did you all hear the power of that? Raise your hand if you did. Did you get why that matters so much? Yeah. Shavasana teaches so much. It lets us unglue from the driving need of that thing that can then be turned around as gift. Really beautiful. Thank you, Grace. Let's hear one more because this is really, really rich. So what happened for you today in Shavasana? So many things for our businesses, for our lives, not to mention just, isn't it nice to have a moment to ourselves in a very full day as an entrepreneur, right? Perhaps your days are full too. Cindy.
I was able to drop into it more easily today than I have on other days.
Such a good feeling. Today I'm just there. There can be all kinds of things that contribute. I slept well. There's not things pulling my mind away. It just is what it is. And then when I can receive that day, and it feels like you have, Cindy, and it just as the gift that it is today, how nice is this? And then to release the expectation that tomorrow it has to continue on that journey. Maybe tomorrow my mind will be all over the place. That's okay. But I know that this quiet feeling comes and I really enjoy it when it does. But when the mind is busy, at least I'm getting a little bit more quietness here and I'm maintaining the practice. So I hear all that in that comment, Cindy. And when I can enjoy it here in Shavasana, I can enjoy it in my company as well. Oh, here's a place where things are rolling and things are going well and my day feels smooth and just enjoy it, but not need it to be that way, not hanging on to it. And then that when we release, and again, that's when Letting Go series right beside the Loving Kindness series, when I don't have that fist like this, right? It's like the monkey that reaches in the jar for the banana and then can't get their hand out. You know, you've all heard versions of that story, right? Hanging on so tightly. When I stop doing that, then something else can enter in, which is that heart of loving kindness, which is how business really moves. And so thank you, Cindy. Beautiful. Anything else bursting to be said before we move on today? Okay. I didn't know I was going to, I've got a little story that I want to share. And I didn't know I was going to share this before when I came onto the call. Well, I'm like, oh, how perfect this is. Just something that's happening in my life and in my personal life and my business. So I was on a call yesterday with a woman who she's amazing. And she built her first million or multi-million dollar business when she was 23. And she's built 8 more of them since. And we've only spoken with each other twice and we are now friends and there's so much that we, things that we see eye to eye and just excitement about, exploring our, connection and ways we can help each other. And it was really interesting. The call was really interesting. And I want to share this bit with you, partway through the conversation and we barely know each other. She said, Michelle, you're just really, I can't remember the exact words, you're really kind and compassionate and you listen so well. Were you, and when we'd been, I'd mentioned it because, you know, it was the anniversary of my man's funeral or whatever, right? So that had come up in the conversation. Some things that happened with her partner that were related. So that was part of our conversation. And she said, did that happen to you when your man died? Were you always like this? And that quality, she was underlining it as a standout quality. And it's one of the reasons, I'm sure, that we're now playing together and we're going to be playing together in a bigger and bigger way. And I, you know, what we're practicing here is at the heart of that. It was striking. It so surprised me. And I wasn't trying to do anything. Do you understand what I'm saying? I wasn't trying to do anything. Her comment caught me off guard, but these things become practiced habits and they're intentional. Who am I carving myself out to be, on this planet? And, and I want to share with you, again, we've been learning the metta meditation for the last couple of weeks. In my notes, it's always 1 week. And the last couple of years, it's like, oh, I need a couple classes to really dive into this so that we really get it and can actually use it. And I mentioned this, but I found the actual quote and wanted to share it with you. It's from Sharon Salzberg's book, Loving Kindness, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness. And I've said to you in different contexts, it's like, oh no, to grow a really strong business with a great foundation, we have to pay the price of being happy. Oh well, right? To really land our strategy sessions. First, like when we're happy, you know, so much happens and the doing strategy sessions and doing high ticket work creates a conditions, a great possibility of happiness and loving kindness does that as well. And on that foundation, strong connections are built with others, whether it's joint venture partners or team or whatever it is. And it's from simple practices that accumulate over time. So I told you this story before, but I wanted to share it with you in her words. So it's on page 40 of my version of it anyway. So she was saying, she was at this loving kindness retreat. She says, so the first week I spent directing loving kindness toward myself. I felt absolutely nothing. She teaches this stuff. It's like, this is early on in her practice, but she was still deeply in the practice. Like, it was the dreariest, most boring week I had known in some time. So I'm trying to tell you too, don't give up. And don't need to think that you have to see the results right away. I sat there saying, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, over and over again with no obvious results. Then, as it happened, someone we knew in the community had a problem, and a few of us had to leave the retreat suddenly. I felt even worse, thinking, not only did I spend this week doing metta and getting nothing from it, but I also never even got beyond directing metta toward myself. So on top of everything else, I was really selfish. She says it so well. I was in a frenzy getting ready to leave. As I was hurriedly getting everything together in my bathroom, I dropped a jar. It shattered all over the floor. I still remember my immediate response. You are really a klutz, but I love you. And then I thought, wow, look at that. Something did happen in this week of practice. So the intention is enough. We form the intention in our mind for the happiness and for our happiness and the happiness of all. This is different from struggling to fabricate a certain feeling, to create it out of our will, to make it happen. So often in our companies, we're trying to do that. And in our worlds, like, let me make it happen. Let me force it. I'm doing this launch. And it's not that we don't take action, but if this isn't the ground, all the action is like a chicken running around. Sorry, Cindy, with his head cut off. It's always a metaphor, you know, sorry, Cindy, all your chickens. It's like, give me a new metaphor, but it's really graphic. I was like, oh, useless effort, right? And then horrible and violent. So instead, this is different from struggling to fabricate a certain feeling, to create it out of our will, to make it happen. We just settle back and plant the seeds without worrying about the immediate result. That is our work. If we do our work, then manifold benefits will surely come. So what did you hear? I know you heard that story a couple of weeks ago, but you heard it in her words, which I think she says it so beautifully. What did you hear for you in this? Before we move on to today's questions, today's material, I want to tap us back into that metta meditation coming from love, not fear, the metta meditation. Remember the, either from Sharon Salzberg's, let me just stay with Sharon Salzberg. What did you hear for you here? I already heard the story, but did you hear it newly? What's this moment for you? Cindy, thanks. And then Marie.
I'd like you to reread this one, but when you said settle back and plant the seeds, and then I didn't hear the rest of it, but that really struck me.
Uh-oh, did my bookmark just fall out? What page did I do?
40-something.
What, 40-something?
40-something is what you said.
40.
I lost my bookmark. That's funny. All right. Let me see if I can find it again. Oh, here it is. Okay. And what was the piece you were looking for again, Cindy?
Settle back and plant the seeds. And then I think it was without something.
Oh, wait, I'm on the wrong page. Like, how come I can't find it here?
You just enjoy reading the book.
Yeah. I'll see you guys in an hour or two.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So the intention is enough. Sometimes we're striving. It's like, okay, I got to feel loving kindness for myself. If I don't, the world will fall apart. Then I'm hanging on instead of cultivating that practice and habit of loving kindness, right? So the intention is enough. And can you hear the quality of gentleness for ourselves too in that? Man, I didn't do it right. I got to make sure that if I don't ace it, although, you know, type A perfectionist, and perhaps you guys have that streak. I know I do, trained as an academic, right? So the intention is enough. We form the intention in our mind for our happiness and the happiness of all. This is different from struggling to fabricate a certain feeling, to create it out of our will, to make it happen. We just settle back and plant the seeds without worrying about the immediate result. That's our work. If we do our work, then manifold benefits will surely come. With that, when we really, if you really implement what Sharon Salzberg just said in your company, in your life, that can be worth the whole investment for this year, because it brings about a radically different way of being than most entrepreneurs out there in the world. And here's one of the reasons why. Often we struggle too hard and we work so hard, and then we expect results and then we don't get them, and then we're disappointed, and then it builds a cycle. If you've ever been there before, so I'll know I'm not alone, raise your hand. Done that? Thank you. Unanimous. Right? And so instead, yes, sometimes we put the work in. I'm not against doing stuff. That's not what I'm trying to say. But as I do things over here, can I let go of the result of it? That's from the Letting Go series, right? Let go of the result of it. Let go in the meta meditation over the result. I cultivate that practice. And then often what I find is as I'm doing the stuff that I know these are the right things to be doing at this stage of the company, because I'm intentional with what I do. And the results don't come in over here where I've been working often. And instead, they come piloting in from over here, way out in left field. It's just like you do the stuff, and I just know that it's going to come back some way, somehow. I know the universe conspires to support me and my company and the work that we're doing on this planet. And then just toward the end of last week's call, I said, you know, my prayer, I don't know that I've ever shared that, or if I have, maybe once in, you know, all the years of this community, I haven't said it very often, but I just really wanted to be very real with you. My prayer over and over again is, make me a channel of your peace. You know, there's something larger than me, whatever you want to call that, whatever that is for you, may I just be a channel of your peace, something bigger than me, something that is bigger than my ego, bigger than what I can even grasp about what I'm doing. So, and whatever form that may be, can it not matter to me what the form is? And when I do that, I cultivate it in Shavasana, I cultivate it in the metta meditation, and then things just come in from wherever they do, and I'm just not worried about it. And then that's when it gets to be fun to grow the company, to do the work, to be in this world as an entrepreneur, as a visionary, as a messenger, as doing all the things that we do on this planet to help people transform their own lives and thereby to collectively up-level the planet. So thank you for that, Cindy. Really nice underlining. I'm really glad I asked you guys, what did you hear? There's a lot there. We could spend the whole day. Well, I've spent a whole week, you guys know, teaching this before, right? Many from first thing in the morning till last thing at night. And it's so we do, but we do a deep, deep dive here in this series. And I really, we've never been here before. I've never so clearly connected loving kindness with Jeremy Bentham. So you remember that from last time, the panopticon and what the structures are out there in the world that have us disciplining ourselves. And then the profound antidote that is the meta meditation that can utterly change how we do strategy sessions, how we speak from stage, how we interact with others. How much we enjoy our company as we're building it, right? So anything else arising from that reading of Sharon Salzberg? Anything else? Yeah, Grace.
For me, and using your language, I just want to underline the phrase, the intention is enough. My sense is we could be present in the moment, knowing the intention is enough. Mm-hmm. Just be open to, it's part of letting go, right? It's part of letting go. The intention is enough and be open to the possibilities.
Yes. Thank you for underlining that. And again, the connection between the letting go series, why we do the letting go series before. And again, if you haven't done the letting go series yet, or you don't remember what was there or whatever, don't worry about it. Let that go. It's okay. And all this work is holographic. You can enter in at any point. But I'm explicitly connecting those two, because if we're hanging on so tight, then we're going to try to do the meta meditation with so much power and action and better get it right and all that stuff. And I'm like, let all that go so that a heart that is different from all that striving comes in. And as I say, it had very practical results in my day yesterday. But I wasn't trying to do anything. I was just having a great conversation with an amazing entrepreneur who books out her connection calls in 20-minute increments, and we spend an hour and a half on the phone. Just like, hey, Michelle, yeah, I still have time. Oh, yeah. You know, but like, yeah, I still have time. Yeah, I still, like, let's keep talking. We meet in person, and when are we going to get together? And super excited about what we're going to be able to build together. So, yeah. And this brings to mind then wins. From you, that was one of my wins. I was so excited. What would you like to share? What's been rolling for you this week? Let's just hear a couple of quick wins, a sentence or two from one or two of you, so we can hear what's rolling for you. And that always grounded in that appreciation. It's like, oh, there are things rolling. Let me notice that, so more of them will come my way. Marie, thank you.
My wins, I think, are actually founded on a deeper commitment I've made to my meditation practice. So what you've just shared from Sharon Salzberg mirrors my experience, which is quite lovely. And I did post a couple of them, but I think it's worth just saying here. So one of them is I have this 5-day invitation-only writer's retreat I'm hosting in August. And there was one more spot. And there was one woman that I had in mind that I thought would be perfect. And I was thinking about contacting her, and I had her in my mind. And then she ended up contacting me and asking if there was still a space she wanted to come. So
let the universe do the work.
I didn't even have to pick up the phone, which I thought was amazing.
And the intentionality was there in you, right? Just totally. It's not different in kind from what we've just been talking about. We just hold the intention and know that she's perfect, and the confidence in that and the conviction about it, but without attachment, all the things that we've been learning about all enacted there, and what ease in growing your company to let her just call me. Beautiful, Marie. Thank you.
And then the second thing is I've been thinking about putting in a proposal to offer a writing retreat at the Hollyhock Center on Cortez Island, which is a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. And that was on my 3-year plan, but just like Bali, it's like, why the hell wait? So I just put together a proposal.
Love it, Marie. Beautiful. Hi, I want to do this. No time like the present. This is my vision. And there's something inspired in me. And so act. And one of my mentors, Andrea J. Lee, I think she was the one who, I already knew this, but I think she's the first one who really, it landed in me when she said it, that to take a when there's an inspired moment like that, to take some kind of action. The universe, and I teach this here too, like the universe loves action, loves inspired action. And so I have this idea, and so many of our ideas just die on the drawing board. Like, here's an idea, I follow it up, right? And then there has to be discernment in there, so we don't like follow up on 100 things, but it landed in you, you loved it, it's been there for 3 years, that intentionality. It's like, oh, let's do it. Love it, Marie. Thank you. Let's hear one more win. What's rolling for you now? Who has something they'd like to share? Grace, thank you.
Two wins this week. One was I started with Marie's writing program, virtual writing program, and I have to say it was in the evening, and I shared this with Sherry yesterday. What was so wonderful about having that in the evening is that I really slept well during the night and woke up in the morning with all kinds of ideas. So that was like completely beneficial. So Marie, just thank you for that. The second win was yesterday in the small group with Cheryl, Sherry and I, we through the end of the call, we were sort of summarizing all that's happened to us in the last few months and where we wanted to take it and what our commitment was. And I became very clear about all the pockets of what I want to be able to do, what I can do. And the thought was, I just need to start with one. But having them all there in writing, I put them in clouds is where I put them. Mm-hmm. I put them in clouds really just enables me to say they're out of my head here on paper. And now I can just start with one and moving forward and then just be open to what happens. Those are two wins.
I love it. Thank you, Grace. And getting things out of our heads, especially as things are growing, more and more stuff gets in our heads and can get in the way. This has certainly happened in this company. And so having a place to put them down, and you put them in these beautiful bubbles and on paper so that you can actually make choices. And can you hear the difference in you from all the ideas bubbling? Was that just last week? And now the clarity of thought and word, could you all hear that shift from last time? Can you feel that too? I know you can feel that, Grace. Beautiful. Yeah, so getting it actually down on paper. And this relates to a topic that we're not going to go into today, but I had the thought to at least mention this to you yesterday. So I'm going to mention it to you. Having a place to put down the thoughts and projects in our company as the company grows, it's so extraordinarily important. And if you want to know more about that, just ask me questions about it. But a project management system. It sounds far away from what you were doing, but it's not at all. It's like, here's the things and here's the ideas. And we use Basecamp. There's other ones out there that you can use. There's Asana, there's Trello, there's different ways to manage projects. But we use Basecamp. We didn't start with Basecamp. We've been using Basecamp for about a year, and it does exactly what you're talking about, Grace. And so I realized there are all these projects that used to be in my head. I have a binder of them as well. I was just sorting some of them out this morning. And there are like 25 different projects right now that the company, big and small, that the company is working on, and just dividing them out into the binder and then getting them over there in Basecamp. And they all used to be floating around in my head. And then there's no space for creative thought. There's no space for spaciousness. There's no space. So I love what you said. And it's crucial in order to grow the company that thoughts go onto paper, thoughts go into other people's heads, so that there's spaciousness, that same spaciousness that Shavasana teaches. So love that, Grace. There's a difference in your words because of that today, a difference in your presence, difference in the way that you're showing up. And then there's an ebb and flow of things. All that creative ideas, that's good too, right? It's not one instead of the other. It's like, what do we do with that? What's the next step? I love what you've done. Beautiful. Okay. So next, I want to decide which order to do things. And I think today we're going to start with the questions, and then I'll do some training. We've got a couple of questions on deck with Mary Kay. And if you posted anything in the Facebook forum, by the way, that you thought I might see, this week I didn't. Usually I do. I'm in there at least once a week to see what's going on. So if you post anything, always, if you want me to see it, tag me and text me or I won't see it. I might see it far down the way, but I may not see it. I don't see everything that's there. So make sure you let me know. So Mary Kay says, I'm filming therapy exercises unique to my work with my miniature horse, recovering from an injury which involved complications. And this question actually is very specific to Mary Kay. Like, I'm doing this filming and it's specific to her work, but this is going to apply to everybody. This is a really, really great question. So again, here's the details. I'm filming therapy exercises unique to my work with my miniature horse recovering from an injury which involved complications from surgery. It could be like an unfolding chapter story, and I don't even know the ending. If I publish parts of them now as we go along, what is the best way to do this and easy for me? I got this story, it's unfolding, I want to publish it as it unfolds. How can I do that and how can I make it easy? My thoughts so far: send a partial video to my list and Facebook, then ask for people to sign up if they want to see the bigger video, which has more training they can learn from. Should they pay for this or just make it free or with donations or donations to a horse rescue or what? So great, great question. I'm in the midst of something that I can film and send out to my list. I want to stay in touch with them. I want to give value. And so the impulse behind that is really, really great. Always we should be growing a list. We do that with a free gift to start with. Carly, I'm just going to mute you. Hi, Carly.
Hi.
Hang on.
Sorry, I'm on my phone here.
Oh, and for some reason, mute audio. There we go. Okay. So I think I muted you. No, I think you mute you, Carly, because I was trying to mute you probably the same time you were.
It says you muted me. Sorry.
Yeah, mute audio. Okay, I think I did now. So Mary Kay's question. So we want to be growing a list. People's attention span is 7 seconds. We don't try to sell them something on a website. So just to kind of give the 8,000-foot view of the context of Mary Kay's question. So in 7 seconds, like, here, buy this. It's just really silly. What we want to do is, if people find their way to us in some way or other, give them a free gift, something that matters to them, something in your field, how to construct that. If you're not sure, talk to me about it and we'll dive in. We do parts of that in practical applications, but you can ask at any time. So then you've got they've exchanged their contact information for something of deep value that you've given them. And now you're in a relationship and now you're talking to them. And as your list grows, these are more people who have raised their hands, that they're interested in your work. You get to chat with them and some of them will come along and do deeper work with you, right? So that's the context. That's one of the reasons why Mary Kay ought to be doing this, and it's a good thing to do. I know some people say, well, you're supposed to email to your lists. I don't know if you've heard these things, but I'll do it at least once a week or do it at least once a month. I've heard everything, right? Or at least twice a week, or you got to stay in contact. And I've not ever done those things. And we have a really engaged list. I didn't really pay much attention to my list until about a year and a half ago, and then started to grow it once I knew who I wanted on that list. And so if you've got a small list, that's fine. You don't need a big list to do some outstanding work and have a really thriving business. And you can grow the list slowly and in the background and go with a high ticket virtual retreat first, right? Do that first. But then as you're growing this list in the background, then you need something to say to them. I don't just like sending stuff just to send stuff. I only send stuff to the list. I don't send regularly. A lot of people will say you should. I just send when I've got something to send people. And then people are quite responsive. Everybody's inbox is pretty full. I don't want to send extra stuff. I don't want to bombard people. So if I'm sending something, it's because I mean it. So that's what's worked for me. Other advice out there about what to do. But then, so here's Mary Kay, and she's got this list and she's got people that she can send this to. Now, what should she send? How can they engage in the story? It's an interesting story. She doesn't know how that's going to end. Now, the question that Mary Kay, that I would be asking, and all, this is a good question for all of you to be asking in your particular fields, is like, well, where is it that I want to take them? I always want to begin with the end in mind. No matter what I'm doing, every single time, that is always where I begin. So, and what I recommend, once you've got a lot of things established in your business, you can take them other places, right? but the very first place to take them. Until this part of your company is really functioning strongly, my strong suggestion to you, the place you take them is to a conversation, right? So you're always driving people to strategy sessions. And then some of those people will do further work with you. Some of them will just become raving fans and they'll refer other people to you. Some of them, you'll just serve them without attachment in that moment and refer them to somebody else because that's what they need and so on, right? So so that's my recommendation. There might be sometimes when you might be driving to an event or whatever, but if you're driving to an event, talk to them in strategy sessions. It's like for a long, long time, that's really, if you think you have an exception, ask me a question about it and I'll let you know what I would do if I were you in that exceptional case. So if Mary Kay is driving them to strategy sessions, and is that what, had you had that in mind already, Mary Kay, a yes or a no? No, right? So, but does that make sense when I say it? Yes, especially for Mary Kay when she said, I don't really want to do low ticket, Michelle. I'm having so much fun with this high ticket and I like those clients. And like Mary Kay enacting all the lessons of that whole one day deep dive high ticket virtual retreat, especially if that's the case. And some of you may be working from a different end. It's not right or wrong. I have strong opinions, but don't let me be your dream stealer either if you're doing it otherwise. It can be done otherwise. My strong preference is to do it this way because I like to let it be easy. But so if Mary Kay is then, especially because that's what she loves and that's what she wants to do, then high ticket can only happen from either a conversation or an event. You can't, it's challenging to sell, say, a $5,000 program either online or with a virtual talk, or there has to be a much deeper connection. Because why should people trust you when, you know, they just land on your website, they're going to buy something for $5,000. It just doesn't happen. Maybe rarely, but with people who have a lot of experience in the industry, why try to set it up the hard way? So if Mary Kay then is driving towards strategy sessions, then she has something to go on. Then she knows that the intention behind what she's doing, and again, I suggest this for all of you, all the structures that I just mentioned, these are great structures to have in your company. What is it? What's the story that she's telling that will have them want to come and do strategy sessions with her? And always, I love the way that my teacher, Lisa Sasevich, has articulated this, but you know, if you work long enough with any teachers who are really, really good at what they're doing in business, they all have some variation of this. Some people I've worked with, Jeff Walker, Sandra Yancey, they're all going to teach some version of this. I like Lisa's language around it. She calls it PSPS, problem solution, problem solution. So I want to, you know, give credit where credit is due. And so you're going to solve some problem for them, right? So that video needs to solve some problem for them. And the problem, if you're sharing a story, it could be, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like, are you trying to entertain them for the moment, but then they have a question that arises from it? I don't know. But you've got to know what the problem is. Otherwise, if there's no problem, why would they click on it? Maybe the problem is they're bored and they just want to be entertained. I mean, that could be, I don't know. But you have to know very clearly what the problem is that you're solving. And then the solution is to watch that video. And then once they've watched that video, they've got another problem. What's the problem that they now have? And the solution is going to be come talk to you. And that can be as elaborate or as not elaborate as you want. Because Mary Kay also said, Michelle, I want it to be easy. And that's a really good thing. And I want you to think of your business, or at least this is what I strongly advise. Think of your businesses as iterative. Do you understand what I'm saying by that? Like you do something and you do the best version you can right now with the resources you have. Don't kill yourself over it. Build a smaller version of it. This is right from Wallace Waddles' The Science of Getting Rich. You might not have the resources to build a whole department store, but you can build the shoe section over here, right? Build that piece. So I'm saying build the high ticket part to begin, build that part of your store, right? That's a good place to begin. So you might not be able to build. So one of the people who teaches this, I've never done the deep dive work with him, but I understand the essence of the work and a lot of people followed it. It's Jeff Walker. He's got a well-known $2,000 program. It's called Product Launch Formula. I wouldn't say that any of you listening to this need that right now. I've never even done it. It's a great program. Right? And the essence of Jeff Walker's work is, have you done that work before? Or because I saw you nodding. No, but you know of it. Yeah. Okay. So
yeah, I think I have his book.
Yes, I have his book too. Yeah, and everything that's, you know, the essence of it, all that we need is in his book. And so he calls it, I think, and again, you know, forgive me if I get some of his language wrong, but a sideways launch. So instead of a bunch of copy that's written, and instead of just a page where you, long sales page where you sell somebody something, he has a three, his old structure anyway, when I last looked at it a couple of years ago, a three video series where you have one video and another video and another video, and maybe it's that video or the next one is the one where you're selling them something, right? And then they enter into a program. And it doesn't, it's not rocket science. So you don't need the whole of his structure to know that if you're going to do more than one video, and also I would just let this be playful too, Mary Kay, like let it be playful. If you haven't done this before, go ahead and do it and send it out. It doesn't have to be perfect. And the next time around, I was like, oh, I can see the thread and I can see the structure. And this person came to me, and I'll ask them why they came to me. And the next time around, you build on that and do it again. So don't think you have to, like his product launch formula, I was on one of his 2-hour calls or whatever it is. And, you know, it's all this stuff. And then there's this, and then there's that email, flow, you know, can't start from there. But you can, it's always one yes at a time. There was a question last week that was talking about that, or the week before. One yes at a time. If it's a series of videos, the yes that you would want is when they watch this video, you're going to solve some problem. And then you know, so they've got a problem coming to it. So they want to watch the video. You've solved something. And then the next problem, the solution is going to be in the next video. Your only yes is that they're going to keep watching the video series, right? And maybe keep engaged with you and ask questions or whatever it is. So you can think of it as practice. Think of it as fun practice, right? For the next time around. Often we do some really successful launches and I've only just thought of them as practice. And it's like, oh my goodness. The first 3-day event that I taught where I actually made an offer, there were two people in the room and it was years ago. And the company made $13,000. And that wasn't my intention at all. I just wanted to practice a structure that I was learning. And, you know, and we closed 150% of the room. Somebody ran away and told a friend about it. And, you know, so I was just practicing. I just wanted to serve them. I just wanted to do a really good job. And then the next time, you know, I'd bring people and sell stuff and so on. And in the practicing, I was almost shocked, like in the room. I could feel the energy and the tension. I'm like, oh my goodness, it's actually, you know, it's actually happening. That's cool. So I would have that same attitude about it, Mary Kay. And the problem that you're solving, maybe there's a common problem that happens in, like, what's their top of mind problem? What are the questions that they're always asking you? And maybe it's, you know, I don't know your field well enough, but you do, or the people around you do. I'd be, you know, you can go inside yourself. You can talk to other people in our community. You can, because sometimes a person outside will see something new. You can talk to other people in your field. And maybe the problem is, let me see. I think of horses like kids. So I mean, I don't know if they're really like that, but it's like, what do you do when you have a broken horse? How do you keep from driving yourself crazy? I think of my broken, you know, my kid is broken. My kid's really sick and sometimes it's long days and you don't sleep. And I don't know if that's the problem, but you do. What's the one thing that you can do to make it an easy experience for you and your horse? That may be it. It might be nothing like that. And then I want to come and I'm curious and you solve it, but it's like, okay, but then I don't know what their problem is next. And then you're going to answer that in the next video. So does that give you some idea about how to structure that? That's a lot about how you bring a story together, what you should be even thinking about anytime you're sending out content to people, how you nurture your list, why you should grow one. I mean, a lot of business content from that one question. Did that give you some helpful support, Mary Kay? Okay. Let's hear the one thing that you heard that was most important. And then I want to hear from one of you because I want to know that not does this apply, but how does this apply to you? This should apply to everybody here, absolutely. So Mary Kay, one thing that you heard.
Well, the thing that's on my mind right now is I've been wondering if I should publish this story because if it ends in euthanasia, but then all that you're saying, that would be, I could handle that because lots of people have trouble with that. And I can show them lots of ways to handle it with loving presence.
Fabulous. I love it. It's very real. It's very present. Cindy, with her veterinary, you know, as a vet, she like knows more about animals than many of us here, right? And see the deep nod from Cindy and others as well here. How beautiful is that? And one way for, like, there is structure that we need to do in a story, and we cover that content at other places in the year, but the structure of story is important too. I don't want to negate that. I want you to know that the structure is important. But right now I'm not emphasizing that. I want to emphasize the other side. If you're surprised by the story and you don't know how it's going to turn out, then your reader or your listener will be too. You don't know how it's going to turn out. And that's like, how real is that, right? And vulnerable. People, like, we need to be seen as both credible and vulnerable in front of our audiences. And the vulnerability of sharing this story. I don't know all of it, so I don't know if this is appropriate or not. I'd need to know more, and you can keep posting questions about it. But it might be, you might even tell that story. That's pretty hooky, I think. I hesitated to share this, you know, and that could be a subject line. Didn't know if I should share with, didn't know if I should share this with you, or I hesitated to share this with you, .. You know, like, curious, right? I hesitated to share this with you because I actually don't know how it's going to turn out, but it's so often like that, isn't it? But I really wanted to share it with you because I know so often we want to wait till the end to make sure it's okay before we share, but I want to share with you right here, right now. And because I'm dealing with this horse and this is happening and here's the video and there's one piece and curiosity, there's one piece in this that you're not going to want to miss and hint, but don't tell them what it is at minute, you know, and it's like partway through and it's where there was a surprising turn of something. Don't miss that point and comment below when you get there, right? And then in the video itself, it can be both in the video and then later in the copy, you can send them out another letter. You know, at the end of such and such, we had this question and I couldn't help but post another video for you because such and such happened to end. And then you got hooked on the story and all the structures of story will help you, but don't think you have to know all that to start. We've got more than enough with what we've done here and all the other pieces that we've done to run with it, see how it goes, see how they're hearing you, all the things about listening to your audience and see how they're hearing you and getting feedback from them in order to keep crafting that story. Good?
Yes, I especially like it because it's really authentic what I want to share.
Exactly. Exactly. Really, I wanted to put this question up front because I know this would touch for all of you. Something really, really beautiful about how to do this, about how to craft the story, about how it fits in with the larger, you know, part of our business, beginning with the end in mind, so many components of business and where we want those empowering stories in there. So also dovetail with the content that I'm going to teach you. It's not going to, it's going to dovetail exactly with this because how Mary Kay is imagining the people listening to her is going to deeply affect how she's going to put that out there. And that's the piece that I want to give you today. So really nice setup for our call today. Mary Kay, I want to hear from one of you. How does this apply to you? What did you hear? What's the most important piece that you heard for your company? And thanks, Carly. I saw your note. That was just nice. Yeah. Oh, that was for you, Cindy. I just saw the C at the beginning. Thank you, Cindy. Nice. So what did you hear for you? Yeah, Marie.
I probably can't hear it enough. Start with the end in mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Always, everywhere. Everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. In everything that you've seen me doing, the Q&A calls and the other things doing out there in the world, the workshop that I was teaching, a lot of those things got built in their infancy over a year ago. And they have very particular ends, and so they're constructed in particular ways because of where we're headed. And otherwise, it doesn't go in that direction because we haven't pre-planned that. And how we begin, and every piece of it is going to be shaped by that. Yeah, really good. Thank you. All right. Mary Kay had another question. Meta question. If I'm letting go of grasping onto things and wanting this and that, how does meta fit with this? Can it make a person focus on the wanting instead of the happiness or health? And how and why do the words may I be make it feel different? If I use the words may, does it make it neither here nor there, but possible? I've been practicing metta over the past years, and these questions keep coming up for me the more I use metta in my teachings. So this is a very, it was a sophisticated question about business, and this is a sophisticated question around around metta. And then, just because I'm calling these ones sophisticated, don't go, oh, I can't ask a question, in case I hit an editor. They are, every single question is a good question. Even if you start with questions like, what am I doing wrong, Michelle? Everything's going wrong, it's going down the tubes, and I don't know where to go. We're going to want to massage that question because I don't want to answer it directly for you. Are you doing this wrong and that wrong and that wrong and that wrong? But we might massage, the massaging of the question itself is going to serve everyone. There are no wrong questions, absolutely. But these questions, I love the all of the threads that end up going into them in a very business-oriented, a very inner world-oriented question, and both are connected. So I think this question hinges on that word wanting. So did y'all hear the essence of the question? If I'm saying maybe this and that and that and that, isn't that going to make me want and hang on to stuff? I think that's at the essence of the question, right? So how exactly does this work? And what about those words, may I be? Does it soften it somehow? And I think Mary Kay's got the essence of the answer to the question in the question itself. If I use the words may, does it make it neither here nor there, but possible? May I be safe? I love the energy of that question because it's not, well, I better be safe. Otherwise, you know, just may I be safe. There's a wish and a blessing about it. The words are gentle. I love that construction of it. There's different ways that the loving kindness meditation is done, but I love that construction of may I be safe. There's other variants that say, may I be free from danger. I don't like that variant because what that puts in my mind is danger over and over and over again. So I use the version, may I be safe. And there's a wish and there's a blessing. There's no tight grasping in that, I find. And I think the piece about wanting, I want to say this, whatever your spiritual tradition, you might have different beliefs around it, but try this on for size, whatever your spiritual beliefs. There are many belief systems that say wanting is bad. We shouldn't want. And if we want something is bad. We've got to, and the Buddhist traditions are often like that too. We've got to unhook from all wanting. And I see the world a different way than that. I think, you know, and story is different from that. I mean, story is driven by desire. There's something that we want. Entrepreneurship is also driven by desire. There's somebody in front of us that wants something, and they don't have it yet. And so we can help them. So those, like, to label wanting as bad is, I think, one of the mistakes, right? But I would distinguish between, like, wanting and craving, or wanting and raga, attachment. Can I want something but hold it lightly, hold it gently, not like the monkey with its hand, you know, in the jar, right? Instead of that, sorry, I'm like biting my lip here. Something's biting me. Okay. Instead of that, can I hold it gently? Can I know where I'm aimed at, but not be attached? And it's actually energetically the same as the answer that I just gave Mary Kay. Hey, do this and have fun with it and play with it lightly and know where you're headed, but don't be attached to doing the be all and end all of this. You know, you don't have to have all of Jeff Walker's product launch formula. Just play with it and see where it takes you and put in some of the building blocks and then build it again next time. So there's a gentleness and a heart of loving kindness in that. And so it's not that I can't want things, but I'm not attached to having them. In the Buddhist tradition, in the Bhagavad Gita, and again, I'm not a Buddhist, I'm not a Hindu, I mean, you know, but in the Bhagavad Gita, it's do your duty and be unattached to the outcome. So there's kind of dutiful language there, but it's, can I be engaged in that thing that I'm headed, and with story that I'm headed towards something, but I'm not attached to the way that it goes, because maybe something even more delightful is going to come my way than I expected. I don't need to know all the steps of how it's going to come out. I don't need it to come in a certain form. And maybe there's something even more delightful than what I expected. On the call yesterday, for instance, with this woman that I'm now playing, I could not have anticipated what she was offering as a way that we could play together. I had much smaller ideas of it. And when she said, as is typical in a connection call, and I saw you, Marie, what she said was, hey, Michelle, you know, what do you need? Well, how can I help you? And I wasn't feeling needy in the moment. I have all this list of things I can tell people that it'd be nice if we played in this and this and this way. But I was authentic to the moment. So I'm not feeling needy at all right now. There's nothing. I've loved this call. And then the way that she suggested playing was at such a higher level than any of those things that I had on my list. It's like I want things, not need to hang on to them, not need to know the form of it, and just have a gentleness and a heart of loving kindness around all of it. And that really changes how I be in the world, how my company unfolds, how much fun I have along the way. I hope that addressed it. It was a really great question. Did that address it in some way, Mary Kay? And then I want to go to Marie, but did that get there?
I think so.
Okay, awesome. And then if there's more, repost another iteration of that, and we'll take a deeper cut, because it's a profound question. We could spend all day on that question. Marie, what did you want to either ask or clarify or add?
It's not a question so much, but there's something about the language of may I, may all. And to me, it speaks to what you read at the beginning from Sharon Salzberg about it sets the intention. And the intention is enough. And for all the study I've done around loving kindness in Buddhist texts, it's framed around the language of may. Mm-hmm. May I be well. May you be well. May all beings be well. And there's a beautiful prayer. It's like, may the day be well and the night be well and the midday bring happiness too. And it's sort of like, it's all around may.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love that. And from a very different tradition, but to me, they dovetail. You know, I love the teachings of Esther and Jerry Hicks. And one of the empowering questions that they often use is, wouldn't it be nice if ... And I find that same gentle energy around that. May I be safe? May I be well? May you be well, like Marie was pointing to. Or, you know, wouldn't it be nice if a lot of people came to my event? Wouldn't it be nice if the day turned out nice for our picnic? Wouldn't it be nice if when I met on this connection call, we found a really deep connection? Wouldn't it be nice if there's a gentleness about that reduces the hardness and it performs a similar kind of action and it's enveloped with loving kindness? Does that make sense? There's not a hardness about it. So they're not the same tradition, but I find that language dovetails quite nicely. All right, let's hear from one of you, what you heard from that piece for you. And Mary Kay, you can ask another question next time if you want a follow-up question, but I wanna hear from somebody whose question it wasn't. What did you hear for you in this segment with Mary Kay's questions? Spend quite a bit of time on these because, again, it's like the functional business stuff and the loving kindness and how it dovetails is so embedded in those questions. Yes, thank you, Sergio.
The intention is important.
Yeah.
You just have to have the intention and things can happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know how to have the intention, but suddenly I've been overloaded because I got my son who suddenly wants help every weekend and needs a 300-kilometer trip to see him every week. So, but I still got the intentions and things will slowly, bit by bit, come back again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's important to me. Like your connection with your daughter is my connection with my son. So this year is finally year at high school. And so the connection is getting stronger again.
Mm-hmm. So I have the intention that all will go well. I have the intention that I'll be able to serve and support him. And I have the intention that all will unfold in ways maybe even better than what I expected. I have the intention there'll be lots of time and energy to be able to do this. And that resources to do that will come in unexpected ways. And all of that, can you feel the gentleness in and around that, right? Okay, really good. Thank you. Okay, content late in the call today, but all of this so in the energy of the piece of content that I want to teach to you today that you're going to hear it so very easily. So I promised that from that first call, we're talking about love or fear. Remember the pale green pants, the pale with nobody inside them from long ago in this series, and how we so often come from fear, even in micro moments in ways that we don't notice. And that when we change that, so much changes in our companies and in our lives. And then, the antidote to that, coming from fear, coming from hatred, coming from all of those things that unplug us and sap our energy, that metta meditation, how the Buddha sent the monks right back into the same woods, and that as they go there, that the heart that is filled with loving kindness cannot be overcome by fear. And that the absolute amazing power this gives us in our companies. And I said, well, then, but how do we apply this to our words? How do we apply this to our writing? And there's one example of that with Mary Kay already. A video series is composed of words and images, right? And so we already applied it in that way. And I said with Mary Kay, well, when she does this, she's going to have to think about the people she's sending it to in a particular way in order for this to be easy, in order for this to be kind of framed in or imbued with that energy of loving kindness. So the piece that I want to give you today is one that I call either the ideal listener or the ideal reader. And we do a piece in the Letting Go series about listening. Yeah, how do I listen? And this is like a companion piece, but from the flip side. So in the Letting Go series, like, how do I become a better listener? And it's not just all this, I'm going to lean in, you know, I'm going to nod, I'm going to repeat back. Those are some things, but they don't get to the essence of it. Reference the Letting Go series. So how do I be that? This is the companion piece. Well, one of the ways I be that is by experiencing that in others. And one way to experience that in others is to be that, like they're flip sides of each other. Can I listen and can I be listened to? Make sense? From the two different series over here, can I learn deeply, a very deep listening skill that is, again, the person I was talking to yesterday says that you listen uncommonly well. And we weren't even talking about that, but she had the ear to hear how I was hearing, and so much unfolded just from me hearing her in a different way that other people haven't heard. So, listening, being listened to. And here's how often I envision the person who is listening to me. Unconsciously, I don't know that I do this, but you know, I don't always realize I'm doing it. But am I coming from love or fear? As I envision the person who's listening to me, we often don't envision somebody who's going to hear the words, who's going to embrace it with love and kindness. There could have been a trace of that with Mary Kay. Like, how are they going to receive this? There wasn't a big trace of it, but it's like, oh, I better get it right. Or like, there's just a tiny little hint of it in there. And one of the things that propelled the questions, like, how can I get this right? And so that whole series will shift for Mary Kay, or whatever it is we're putting out there in the world, like Sherry's talk that, you know, we're going to be discussing this afternoon, right? In our VIP day and other aspects too. But all of that will change. What we write will change. What our words are, whether it's a talk or networking or whatever word situation we have when we're trying to get our message out there on the planet, when we start to envision the receiver of those words in different ways. Often my expectation, strangely enough, comes right out of a deep and visceral fear. You know, I say, like, fear of public speaking, you know, like people would rather die than have to speak public, or whatever it is, right? So afraid. And there's a fear of a rejection, a fear of being pushed away. And I don't study this, but from those who study this, I've studied bits and pieces of it. We are designed as humans to be communal. Often, like from our ancestors, our survival depended on it. If you're outcast from the group, you're going to be over there and you're going to starve, right? And this is brought home to me too. My daughter and I, can I tell you this? I'm just going to confess it. I just thought this show was absolutely stupid, but my daughter got hooked on it from somebody else watching it. And so we started watching a few shows, and it is a really silly show, I will confess. You can hear my editor in around this. So I've been watching Survivor. Right? Silly show, but it's really interesting about human dynamics. It's like these people thrown on an island, and there's something primal about it, about like our ancestors. And every week somebody gets voted off. And all the, you know, it's a show that really teaches you to lie and steal and all these things, right? Because they all do all these kind of weird things to make sure they're the one in. But one of the things that I'm just realizing, it wasn't in my notes anywhere here, but the profoundness, one aspect of something that's profound in this show is how desperately they need that community in order to survive. They get tossed off the island if they're not in the group. It's very primal in us. We're going to be eaten by the tiger if we get cast out by the group. And so we have this, it's like it's wired into us from generations that, boy, we better find our place in the group. And if I say the wrong thing, I might be, okay, so coming from fear, coming from fear, coming from here, fear, just like we're trained to live in the panopticon. We're trained to live from that place of fear. And then it's really hard to speak. Even the energy is shifted in the room when I even say that. It's like, oh, everybody's breathing a little less. So then what's the antidote in terms of our words, in terms of our writing, in terms of speaking in front of a group? Can we flip that around? Because we're envisioning those people in front of us as though they were members of Survivor. And I don't know if you probably at least anecdotally know, you probably never watched it, right? But anecdotally know what it is. It's a group of people, again, thrown on an island, and then they keep voting one person off. And so those people, they kind of run sort of paranoid, and they're always, you know, the other people, they envision them as always their potential enemy. And yes, they make, aha, thank you, Marie. You're outing yourselves. I'm a big Survivor fan. Yes, thank you. I'm not alone. So everyone, there's only these temporary alliances, and everyone's the enemy. And in the end, it teaches competition. Like, there's a lot of our cultures of values are embedded in that show. And only one person can win in the end. And you can't work together to be the ultimate winner, because you're not allowed to share the $1 million that the winner gets. So a lot of our cultural values embedded in that show. And if you don't get it right, so instead of envisioning the audience the way those people on Survivor do, it's very instructive. What if we can envision the exact opposite? What if we started to ingrain in ourselves, in our bodies, in our minds, hearts, spirit, not that, oh my God, if I say the wrong thing, they're going to put my name on the ballot and I'm going to get tossed off, and I, like, my stomach hurts when I even think of it. What if we're on a different island than Survivor? What, you know, if I think of that, my life is, I construct my life and my world is as a reverse paranoid, the opposite of Survivor, the world conspires to support me. And what if the person in front of me, that I can envision and see that as well? Marie, you wanted to, that was a hand? Yeah, you go.
Well, I just have a real life example about this. So when I was writing my book, which is a memoir, initially the audience I was envisioning reading it was my biological family, which is anything but a supportive, nurturing audience. So it was really making it hard for me to write what I needed to write. And so part of Michelle's teaching around ideal reader, ideal audience, is actually envisioning the readers that were I really wanted to write to. And it wasn't for my family at all. So if they happen to read it, so be it. But that really wasn't what my writing was for. Then that changed everything.
Thank you for that, Marie. We did some profound work early on in and around the ideal reader, ideal listener. And we don't even realize that we're usually envisioning something like Marie's biological family as our listener. We're going to get up on stage and we think they're going to throw tomatoes. We end a strategy session. What if I say the wrong thing? What if we start to ingrain a completely different idea? And this goes beyond ideal client. Ideal client is a subset of this. You understand what I'm saying? When we get what an ideal listener is, what an ideal reader is, ideal client is just one manifestation of that. There's an ideal JV partner that I was just speaking to on the phone yesterday. There's an ideal team member. There's an ideal friend and ideal, like all the relationships that we have in our lives. Can we envision it in that way? And then it also, as a result, becomes so much easier to envision the ideal client. Make sense? When we start in business just from ideal client, we're envisioning such a small world. And here instead, we've come to the 8,000 foot view. Can I envision what an ideal listener is like? So I'm going to start you off with this, kind of like I did with the meta meditation toward the end of the call. We'll do another piece on this next time. Where and how do we implement this? And what's another key quality that we need to be able to see in ourselves and others and the world in order to really enact this ideal listener? So it's like, if ideal client is small, then we step back, we see the ideal listener and reader. And then next week, we're going to even step back again to an even deeper level or higher level quality that's going to allow all of this to happen easily. If you heard what I said, if that makes sense, at least theoretically, raise your hand. I want to hear if you heard that. Yes. Okay. Most of you did. Okay, good. So the person who articulates this so beautifully, and let me see, I'm just watching the time. How do we want to do this? I think, let me see. I'm just going to say this. I need permission from Sherry. Sherry, can we start 15 minutes later? Because I want a little bit more time. And yeah, okay, thank you. We're doing our VIP day this afternoon, and I want to make sure that I really serve and support you. But I had the deep intention of stopping it out in the hour, but you know me, it's hard for me to do that. And I can give you some pieces so you can actually start running with this week. My favorite source for this, and I have returned to this work again and again and again over many years, and I hear deeper and deeper levels of this and deeper applications of this in every aspect of my company and my life every time I return to it. And it's a book called Right from the Heart by Hal Zina Bennett, Unleashing the Power of Your Creativity. And some of you know of Julia Cameron's work, the writer's the Artist's Way. And I get chills when I think about this little blurb that she says up here. Julia Cameron says this is one of the handful of real writing books. I have owned and read like gazillions of books on words and writing over many, many years. This one has stayed on my shelf. And Julia Cameron agrees, like, this guy knows what he's talking about. And one of my favorite, goodness, I had it marked off. One of my favorite exercises in this has to do with exactly this ideal reader. I thought I had it marked off, but I've got marked off the wrong page. Give me 1 second. Should be able to find it pretty quickly. Funny. Da, 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 da. Maybe it's here. How funny is that? Give me 1 second. Take a moment just to jot down some notes, some actions, some things you want to do after this call. I hope I can find it. I had it marked off. Ah, I did have it marked off. I just had it marked off on the page before, and so I didn't see it. Okay. I'm just trying to decide how much of this I want to share with you. I want to start here. This love, this meta energy is reciprocal. It's like I'm listening and being listened to, and the love pouring out from us, and then we just receive it. We see it more from the world. How do I end up feeling more loved? By loving more, right? Sounds simplistic, but true. There was a meditation teacher, and one of the students came and said, you know, my mother would never let me love her. And sometimes we have this hardness and this anger and this hatred in there. And the teacher's response was, she could never stop you. Why give that power away to that other person? She won't let me, if I could love, if only she would be different. Where's the unconditional love in that? My mother would never let me love her. She could never stop you. To embody and be that doesn't have to do with the other person. So having that quality of, he's talking about writing here, and he says we need to love our readers. And to do that, well, envision a lovable reader, someone who loves us back, someone who hears us, someone who hangs on each word, who will hear what's being said and what's not being said. So he says, and so again, Marie's example was so good. We did a deep dive on a VAP day a long time ago in around ideal reader. And as you heard from Marie, it changed everything about which words were spoken, how they came out, how the writing went, how much fun the project was, what even could be said or not said. This changes everything for us. And then we can apply that in every area of our companies, right? Our team, our joint venture partners, the world. So he says, and this is from page 63 in this copy of this book. He says, when we let ourselves love our readers, they know it. I know it when I read something by an author who acknowledges and respects me. And if Marie had written it for a family, that the text would not, her book would not have come across that way. Because it's like, oh, I'm a little afraid of you. And with all those barriers. And I don't like, or whatever it is. A couple summers ago, while teaching a workshop in Southern Oregon, I asked people in the class to write a 20-minute description of their imaginary readers. Who are you imagining when you write anything? Who are you imagining when you're speaking? Who are you imagining when you walk into a networking situation? Is it like Marie's biological family, or is it like the person that I was on the call with yesterday? And whoever that is for you, deeply connected and easily so. So I asked people in the class to write a 20-minute description of their imaginary readers. One man, Gil, finished in about 10 minutes, then sat back and waited for the others to get through. When we were getting ready to read our efforts aloud, I was pretty certain this guy hadn't done much. How wrong I was. When I asked for volunteers to read, his hand was the first one to shoot up. He only wrote for 10 minutes. And I have read this passage over and over and over again for many years. It never ceases to move me. He sat back. So Gil sat back. The one he like, who's your imaginary reader? Who are you imagining? Is it Marie's biological family, your version of that? Or something very different, like what this man envisions? He sat back and in a slow, quiet voice read his description of his imaginary reader. He told briefly of growing up on a farm in Texas. His family was Mexican-American, and they worked the big farms all over the United States, but mostly they were based on this large farm in Texas. He told us about his tío Juan, with whom his uncle, with whom he had a very special relationship. He described one day out in the field, and you can close your eyes for this if you want. There's nothing you need to hang on to, nothing you need to retain. Just let the words wash in like rain. He described one day out in the field on the tractor with him. It was a big tractor, one of the giant John Deeres they used for plowing and pulling harrows to prepare the soil for planting. Gil was a little boy then, about 7 or 8, and he was leaning against the fender as his uncle drove the tractor. Gil wrote, "My Tio Juan is my good listener. He takes his time and moves his soft brown eyes in my direction, tilting his head over to listen to me. We are on his tractor plowing a cornfield, and he stops the old John Deere to hear what I'm saying. He gives me his full grown-up attention. Taking off his straw hat, he wipes his wide, sweaty brow with the back of his hand. His eyes wrinkle up as he gives me a generous smile. This big, gentle man makes me feel completely safe. So I proceed to tell him just anything. He runs his fingers through his thinning hair. The hot Texas sun makes him squint, so he puts his well-worn hat back on. My sharing makes him laugh like a kid himself, and then he says, 'No viejo, no tengo escudado, yo te lo doy.'" As he finished reading the piece to us, Gil explained, "He always called me old man, viejo, a kind of tender term of endearment and respect. I don't know why. He always said I knew more than any child should know." When Gil wrote, he wrote to his memory of Tio Juan. He wrote in gratitude for the love and respect this gentle, caring man gave the little child so many years before. A tenderness and warmth in his writing touched the reader's soul so delicately and subtly, like a knowing look between lovers across the room, or maybe like a man stopping a big tractor in the middle of a hot Texas cornfield to hear what a child had to say. Now, I don't know about you, but I can feel that, like, my body vibrates as I read that. I can feel the tears welling up in my eyes, and it's probably because, I just sent a note this morning to, my man died 3 years ago, as you know, and I sent a note to his ex-wife, who's also a friend, had not been in touch in a while, and I said it was 3 years ago that we were in Dallas under the hot sun watching our daughters play together in the pool right after Shelley's funeral, and Shelley was one of my ideal listeners. And even before I met Shelley, I was reading people and sharing this with people, and it vibrates inside me, the depth of his listening. Sometimes it's my daughter I think of, sometimes it's my mother, sometimes it's somebody else in my life, but it always that quality of unconditional love, that quality of it doesn't matter how long it is that story is takes to unfold. Sometimes I had an ideal listener at an event and I felt like nobody was hearing me. It was at a Peak Potentials event and I was like it was butting heads, and I knew I had something that could help people, but nobody could hear. One person heard me, And then I was able to speak words that moved 50 people and changed 50 lives because that one person heard me. So different ideal readers at different times, different ideal listeners. But when we can envision that person, everything in our words, everything changes. Our words, our ease, our breath, our way we envision what our mission is. We can share the mission of the company with someone, our lives. So here's my, let me see, we're already at 4 minutes after the hour now. Here's my strong suggestion to you. And some of you have done this with me once. Some of you have not done this with me at all. Some of you have done this with me many, many times. It is worth doing. I have done this many times over. Every time there's a new richness and depth to it. And again, it just brought about an amazing joint venture partner in my life. This quality yesterday, how that call went, had to do everything with that ideal reader, that ideal listener, and that quality of meta that connected us so deeply that a 20-minute call turned into an hour and a half long call, turned into projects that you'll see coming down the way a couple months from now. Incredible partnership that's about to happen. So my suggestion to you is to do exactly this exercise this week, whether you've done it never before or once or 1,000 times. Take 20 minutes aside sometime, maybe right after Shavasana is a good time to write. Who's your ideal listener? Close your eyes, see the person, let it be whoever comes into your mind. There's someone who has listened to you before. And I know that's the case because there's a deep listening. If you've never had it before in your life, there's a deep listener in this community. And if you feel the absence of that person in your life that's affecting your company, get on a connection call with somebody who will listen to you this week, right? In this community. And then write that piece and just write, just trust the experience. Just let it come. And then write what comes. Just write as he did. Yours might look very different from his. Just trust the words as they come. And then I would get on a phone call and share with somebody in this community who's willing to do at least one piece of that this week. You know, sit down and write that person. This is company changing. Everyone who's willing to meet with another person in this community to share that. Strongly encourage it. Yeah, all of you again. Fantastic. So there's one of your inspired actions. Who will post this in the Facebook forum? So we have it going over there. For those who aren't here live, they'll get to hear it sooner than maybe they'll get to hear this recording. Will somebody post on the Facebook forum? Hey, does anybody actually, we need two threads. Who will be on a call with me to share my ideal listener? And who did this exercise and what did you uncover? I'd love to see those two threads and who will post one of them? And then we'll get two people to post, or one who will post one thread. Who will post the thread that says, "Hey, I did the ideal listener exercise, and I learned something." Who will put? Thanks, Marie. Who will post that? Will anybody post that for me? Thank you, Sherry. Awesome. And then the second one is, "Hey, I've did that ideal listener exercise, and I would love to connect with somebody on a call who wants to connect with me, and you know, find each other here." So that there's a place in Facebook to pair up. And if it's three of you reading it, or four of you, so much the better. Be inclusive about that. Like, open your heart of loving kindness, let others join in. So who will post that other thread? Hey, let's make a partnership and get on a call to share our ideal listener. Who's going to do that? Who will take that on? Only take a couple minutes. Thank you, Grace. Awesome. All right. One aha. One inspired action, and we'll hear how that went. Will one of you remind me to hear how that went next week? I didn't put it down in my notes, and I want to make sure we go there. Who's going to post that as a question? Can I give that to you, Mary Kay? You were so good at posting questions. Will you post another question that says, ask people how it went with their ideal listener exercise? Will you post that for me, Mary Kay? Thank you so much. All right. And then, as I say, we're going to add that other quality. We're going to step back even further, something that will enable this to deepen and expand, a quality that we want to embody in order to really get the most, squeeze all the juice out of this, who this ideal listener is. So, we'll build on that next week. Always, please keep posting your questions. I know it's July 4th. If you're from the US and you can't make it, I understand. You can't make it live, obviously. Some of you still might be here, but the call will be here for you. And remember that you can post your questions even if you can't be here live. Right? So if you can't be here live, post your questions. Let me know if you want me to answer it on July 4th or on the next call. Okay. One aha, one inspired action. Cindy, let's begin with you.
Great. I'm still chewing.
Oh, and yeah, and let me see one thing while you're chewing. Remember, practical application starts next week. Next week, so we have two calls next week on the Tuesdays, practical applications, Thursdays, love and kindness call. So go ahead, you can post your questions for either of those. I will check for them both times and can't wait to dive into that material. I'm in a whole new place with this. If you've done it before, don't expect it. Like, we're gonna take it so much deeper this time. And also, you're in a different place. You're gonna hear different things. And if this is your first time around, lucky you, oh my goodness. I love that series. We get to so many places where we use our words and can actually use them on the court to great results. So we'll see you twice next week. I just want to remind you of that. Cindy, you're up.
Okay, so my aha was settle back and plant the seeds without worrying about the immediate results.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, I like that.
And
my inspired action is to do the homework that you gave me yesterday.
Yes. And lots to do there, right? Lots of beautiful things to contemplate. Absolutely. It could not be better, Cindy. Thank you. Grace, go ahead.
Set the intention, yet do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Set the intention and do the work.
Those two together move the world, move our companies, transform our lives. Yes. Your inspired action.
I'm going to journal about my ideal listener.
Yes. It's perfect inspired action for today. Absolutely. Yes. And this week. Thank you. Sergio.
About the ideal listener. So I relate it to my ideal students.
You relate to your ideal students, did you say? Is that the word you
said? Yes.
Yes, thank you for another application of that. Because I know, as I know that from, you know, college teaching, sometimes you go, oh, what if they could be exactly the one who, they will hear it and deeply so, changes teaching life, which changes, transforms our lives. Yes, thank you. What's your inspired action, Sergio?
The exercise you were talking about.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. So glad to hear you guys saying this. Yes. Mary Kay.
Envision how you will be listened to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna put that one into action in about 2 hours on a strategy call and just kind of see what happens. I know it's going to go in and out, but I'm going to just let it do that.
Yes, so there's your inspired action. And we didn't talk about that application very much today, but absolutely, who am I expecting to show up? And I'm going to show up differently depending on who I expect that person is. And when I have a practiced habit of seeing my ideal listener, my ideal reader, it changes that interaction at a foundational level. Yes, thank you. Sherry.
So I think I've got a few things. I'm just going to plan the plans, do the footwork, and let go of the outcomes. And, you know, that's what I heard.
Yes, beautiful.
And then the inspired action is to write out the ideal listener.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful thing to do. It's so powerful. I've done it many, many times. And every single time, something new or a depth, a greater depth of who I know that person to be in whichever form, whoever person comes up for me, there's a greater depth that happens. Really beautiful. Thank you. Yes. Carly. I don't know if you can speak where you are or not, Carly. Okay, so looks like Carly can't speak right now. So that's all the beautiful ahas, beautiful inspired actions. Thank you so much. Great call. I love the depth with which you're hearing everything because we get to take it to so much higher level. So thank you so much for being who you are in this space. So beautiful to me. Have a fantastic week, everybody. I will see you on Tuesday and on Thursday. Bye-bye for now.